All right. Welcome to the All About Nothing podcast. Thank you so much for joining. I am your host, Barrett. And yes, it has legitimately been quite a while since the last time I recorded. It is June the 6th, 2018. Lots and lots going on. Lots going on. So, I know a lot of people have been worried recently, and there is nothing to fear. Our first lady has been found. Yeah. I say found. I don't really know that she's been found. She apparently is safe. She did go in for an operation, probably about a month ago. In fact, so just to recap, so basically, we have not seen Melania Trump, the First Lady of the United States, since they brought the three hostages back from North Korea. It has been nearly a month. Yeah. But NBC News is reporting that despite the fact that there were rumors that she may have either moved out of the White House or she moved back to New York, or she may have gone, she may have passed. So some of the rumors are that she passed away, that she's being replaced, there were all sorts of rumors, but apparently she is fine. What made it really awkward, though, is that, and in all honesty, I think the news probably made it worse than it actually was. But let's just say, so one of the things that just doesn't seem to be within the president's control is his ability to just not tweet everything that he thinks or hears or whatever. Anyway, earlier today, he tweeted that he said basically that, you know, that it's vicious the way that the media is going after his relationship with the First Lady. And, you know, it's that, you know, there were these rumors that she was getting a facelift, and that there were these rumors that she had moved out of the White House and that she had moved back to New York. And there were these rumors that she was in some third world, or not third world country, but she had left, and that she did not want to be married to the president. And in all honesty, I can't really blame her. But yeah, it's her first appearance since May 10th, which was when they brought the hostages back, or first public appearance since May 10th, which was after they brought the hostages back from the individuals that came back from North Korea. She did on May 10th apparently undergo a procedure that her office was calling a benign kidney condition. So she did have an operation. She was unavailable for at least a day, but there were plenty of people that were reporting that whatever it was, this procedure that she underwent, it was in many cases to be considered outpatient surgery. So she potentially could have gone home after the operation, but they said that at least in that instance, that she did stick out the rest of the week in the hospital, after that, we didn't see or hear from her. It had been a long time since we'd seen or hear from her, and of course the news was becoming more and more vicious about. I say vicious. They were becoming more and more inquisitive. The president labeled it as being vicious. He's the one that really seems the most paranoid about any sort of negative information coming out about him and his wife. You know, we are still in the midst of this long running investigation into what is possible collusion with the Russians over the 2016 campaign. There is an ongoing investigation, and see, the president keeps calling it a witch hunt because he is stating that there is no collusion. His what he is putting out there into the universe is that basically there was no collusion between his campaign and the Russians. Now, there is a damning amount of evidence that seems to support that there was collusion, and that and this is just based on information that gets leaked out to the press and then the press reports. But there is potentially enough information that seems to point fingers at the possibility that there was some sort of collusion between the Trump campaign and the Russians. And one of the things that really just I don't try to engage in conversations with people that have the opinions that seem to be, you know, the president was joking when he asked the Russians to basically find the 30,000 emails that had supposedly gone missing. And it's frustrating to get in these conversations because you can sit there and you can say, well, President Trump literally during the campaign says, I don't joke. I don't make jokes. I don't tell jokes. I'm not a comedian. I don't tell jokes. But then when it turns out that people seem to be upset over the fact that he asked Russia in front of everyone to look into finding these emails, you know, it's all of a sudden, oh, he was just kidding about that. That was just a joke. So it's alarming to me how people can sort of just they seem to have this ability to just ignore the things that he says, the things that he admits, the things that he says that you want to grasp onto and say, well, that's him being real. That's the real Donald Trump. But it's hard to hold on to that when, you know, you have so many people that don't want to believe that it's possible that he could have been colluding with the Russians. And you know, they jump to this thing where immediately it's, oh, well, he was just kidding. Even though he says he doesn't kid, he doesn't make jokes, he doesn't do that. And yet, for some reason, they want to hold on to this idea that he was just joking, you know. And then you have to look at the fact that there have been so many indictments, there have been so many guilty pleas, there have been so many people that worked on his campaign that have admitted that, one, they did work with the Russians, that there was some sort of involvement with Russians, and two, that now they're pleading guilty to these indictments. They're pleading, you know, there's a grand jury that is taking in the evidence and then issuing warrants and indictments to bring these people in, and they are, some of them have pled guilty. They have pled guilty and they're turning over evidence. And I'll be honest with you, I can't even imagine how nervous that must make the president, unless he is absolutely just completely disconnected from it. Unless he is so far removed from the entire thing that he can just sit there and pretend like they're not talking about him. You know, one of the things I think that bothers me most about this president is the reports on what his day looks like. And there are so many people that leak, that I guess comes out of the White House, that are staffers there, that they in talking to their friends that work for the news, or they talk to somebody that is in the media, in the news, that just happens to be part of the press corps or something like that. But they will give them little inside information tidbits that claim that, one, the president doesn't come out of the residency until sometimes 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock in the morning. And that when he does, he's sometimes not even dressed for the day. There are these reports that are from staffers inside the White House that claim that he has television set up all over the residency that for the most part are all tuned to Fox News, because there does seem to be, if you want to find collusion, there does seem to be some sort of relationship between President Trump and Fox News, mostly involving President Trump and Fox and Friends, which airs from 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. every weekday morning. And there is, you know, there just seems to be this relationship that you cannot ignore, because they, you know, President Trump is constantly on Fox News or Fox and Friends in the morning. He's constantly taking information from them and talking to them about things. It seems like sometimes that they know they are specifically talking to the president when they are saying things, like they are pushing messages to him specifically. It is so... The only thing that really comes to mind when I think of the situation that we currently have with this president, and the the relationship he has with Fox News and specifically Fox and Friends is it feels like that same relationship that President Putin of Russia that he has with the Russian news, the RT, the Russian news agency, the state run news, and that's it is incredibly uncomfortable just how Fox News can be the only news that's right, and then everyone else is basically just attacking the president. And he keeps I feel like maybe when he was in school, there was no history that was taught when it comes to, you know, specifically the witch hunts and the Salem witch trials, and how women and even men were accused of being witches, and he keeps screaming that it's just a witch hunt, and I for the life of me don't understand how he can keep claiming this over and over and over, because it's not a witch hunt. It really is not. And in fact, today, Speaker of the House Ryan finally aligned himself with South Carolina Representative Drake Gowdy in saying that, you know, that the evidence that is turning up needs to be looked at, and that a decision needs to be made based on the evidence, not just the fact that the president keeps coming out and saying that he's not done anything wrong. And I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. Maybe he didn't. Maybe he didn't actually, in his knowledge, collude with Russia over the 2016 election. Maybe he did not actually have as much involvement in it, say, as some of the people that worked for him. But there was definitely some relationships with Russia or the Ukraine or Turkey or other places that, you know, countries in this world that aren't necessarily our friends. You know, there is this idea that he may not have worked with them, but like I said, people in his campaign, they might have. And if they did, there is a necessity to see, you know, if you look at it like this, let's just say hypothetically, let's say the entire campaign was involved in it and they undermined the entire election. Let's say that they knew that Russia was involved in these spam bots on Facebook and other social media platforms where they were basically filling people with false stories about President Obama, or they're filling people with stories about Bernie Sanders or Secretary Hillary Clinton. You know, that there was all of this misinformation out there completely intended to sway voters towards Donald Trump. And let's say that it was information that was put out there, let's say, by some sort of Russian organization, whether it was the Russian government or a private industry, whomever. But let's just say, hypothetically speaking, that happened, okay? And then take into account the possibility that happened specifically to sway people's votes, and that if that happened, it was done with the knowledge of the campaign, and it was done with the knowledge of social media platforms, that they knew that there was misinformation out there, you know, that. But if you take all of that and you say hypothetically, let's just say that all did happen, and then it did successfully undermine the campaign, and that it did successfully undermine the actual democracy that our country is based on. Wasn't there a crime committed? Was that a crime? We have the Federal Elections Committee has rules in place that you cannot take in money from a foreign government for an election. You just can't, because you don't. There is no way to tell whether there will be favors that have to be called upon, or that government or country or exterior outside of the country, outside of the United States, if that person comes out and decides that they need to request a favor and they're the ones that donated money to your campaign that may have gotten you elected. We can't be certain that president is going to ignore, you know, the requests of some leader from another country who may have funded his campaign in the amount of millions of dollars. But what if that millions of dollars wasn't millions of dollars in a financial sense? But what if that was information such as, you know, lost emails that may have been hacked by some sort of foreign government or foreign intelligence service. You know, how valuable would information be? Could that be looked at as being possibly some sort of financial assistance? I mean, you know, because the president got elected, he's now being paid as the president of the United States. So it's entirely possible that you could look at that as being, you know, you could look at it as being a financial backing of a foreign government. You know, or a foreign entity that is now involved themselves in our campaign. And, you know, there is already, I can't call it evidence because I've not seen it, because nothing's been released, because Robert Mueller is definitely still involved in this investigation into whether crimes were committed. And there obviously were crimes committed because people have been brought in, they've been arrested and brought up on charges, and some of them have pled guilty, like I mentioned before. Okay, so the investigation continues, and we have a president who continues to deny his involvement in it. He continues to deny his campaign's involvement in it. And the thing that he says over and over again is no collusion. There was no collusion. No one colluded. There was no collusion. And I can't hear the same thing over and over and not think, does he believe there's no collusion, or is he simply repeating something just over and over because it's stuck in his head? I'd like to believe that we as the people of this country would only elect someone that was worthy of being called president. You know, I can honestly say in this case, I don't feel like Donald Trump is worthy of being our president. I just don't feel like it. That doesn't necessarily mean that I believe that Hillary Clinton was worthy of being our president. I'm not comfortable with her either, you know. And granted, I campaigned for Bernie Sanders. I made door-to-door calls, you know, and I worked a phone bank. I did all of those things because I believed that of those that were running, I believed that Bernie Sanders was, in my opinion, it may still be, but in my opinion, is someone that best represents what this country is and stands for. You know, I just felt like Bernie Sanders was the one to run this campaign. And in all honesty, there were so many bad choices. I am curious, you know, once we get through this election cycle, once we get through the general election, in fact, here in South Carolina, we have our primary coming up on June 12th. So next Tuesday is the primary for South Carolina. And if I had done my research, I probably would have prepared a little bit better for doing maybe breaking down some of the candidates for the local elections here in South Carolina. We are going to be voting for a governor. Henry McMaster currently is the governor of South Carolina, and he is not necessarily a shoo-in to even be the representative for the Republican Party when it comes to governor for South Carolina. There is the possibility that he may not get an opportunity to run for governor. He may not. There are many there are several Democrats running for governor here in South Carolina. I see the signs up as I get up every morning and walk. I do see the signs all over the neighborhood. We have several for James Smith, who is running. I've seen Kevin Bryant. I've seen Catherine Templeton, who is she is the former director. She's an attorney. She's former director of the Department of Health and Environmental Control. She was the former director of the Department of Labor and Licensing and Regulation. There's John Warren, who's basically just a businessman. His running mate is Pat McKinney. They're out of Charleston County. The Kevin Bryant, I believe, is also, I think I mentioned him. Kevin Bryant is running as the incumbent lieutenant governor. So, you know, this election is going to be important for the entire country because right now, at least at the federal level, we have such an off balance system. You have the legislative branch, which is Congress, and you have the House of Representatives and the Senate. And with those two branches being controlled by the Republican Party, there is a feeling that, you know, and you can deny it, you can admit it, it doesn't matter. It's there. The Republican Party controls the legislative branch, and they decide which bills come to vote. They just, you know, Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan currently, who's resigning, which is terrific because it opens up the possibility that Wisconsin could actually get the opportunity to vote for a new candidate, or they'll get to vote for a new candidate, but they'll get to vote, you know, without the pressure of having a politician who is currently in a place of power drawing as much financial assistance from, you know, people like the Koch brothers and other groups and super PACs and things like that. You don't have a Paul Ryan who is basically a juggernaut when it comes to his candidacy in or his prolonged staying in as the Speaker of the House. But so with the opportunity, with him bowing out and not running, there is the opportunity that there may be either a replacement to him in the form of someone from another party, so the Democrats could flip that seat. You know, when you have politicians decide that they're retiring, and I'm going to get into that here in just a second, I am all over the map today, to be completely honest with you, but I am completely in favor of term limits on how long these people can represent us in the federal government. Because when you have politicians that stay in place for as long as some of them have, you run into the problem of them becoming close with groups, lobbying groups, corporations, things like that, that have the potential to influence these senators and these representatives in ways that we cannot as voters, because, you know, for a lot of them, running in the district that they were elected in, those districts are so heavily gerrymandered or gerrymandered, however we're supposed to say it now. They are so heavily adjusted to lean one direction or the other that it's almost impossible to get them unelected when these elections come around. It is absolutely ridiculous how hard it is to get these incumbents out of office once they've been elected. I mean, you almost, for something like Paul Ryan, if he were running again, he would have to run in a primary against other Republicans. And he'd have to win that primary. I feel like I'm doing a civic lesson, but okay. So Paul Ryan would have to then win his primary election in order to be the representative for the Republican Party when it comes time for the general election, which of course is in November. So with that said, having Paul Ryan step aside to have someone else step in, there is the potential that the Republican Party could be represented by someone who maybe not quite as in line with the president as Paul Ryan has been, or they could choose a Democrat who might be slightly more moderate than maybe the representatives that they've had for the Democratic Party. You get the availability to actually have a better election. Now, the counties and the districts and whatnot are still pretty heavily gerrymandered, and there is... It is difficult to flip or change an area because there is so much political, you know, sway. It's already in place. You know, living in Lexington County here in South Carolina, Lexington County is a very red district, and South Carolina in itself is a very red state. I mean, it's voted Republican many, many times. We have not had a Democratic governor or a Democrat governor since Governor Hodges. And that was, we've had Nikki Haley. We have Governor McMaster right now. We had Nikki Haley before that. We had Mark Sanford before that. And before Mark Sanford was Governor Hodges. Now, Governor Hodges did a lot for this state. I mean, arguably, I guess, because when I first moved here, he was governor, and it was under his watch that we got the education lottery system in place. It was under his watch that there were drastic improvements to some of the social programs here in South Carolina. You know, people call it welfare and they don't like it because, you know, it's helping people that seemingly or based on opinion don't seem to help themselves. There are all these excuses as to why, you know, Governor Hodges was not a good governor, but you know, he was no worse than anybody else. And I feel like when I first moved here, there were a lot of people that liked Hodges. You know, and even Nikki Haley. I mean, Nikki Haley was, you know, there was controversy around her election initially, and there was controversy over some donor money that may have come from the hospital that she was heavily involved in, that she worked for. There's always going to be some discord when it comes to how these elections are handled, going all the way back to, you know, President Trump. And there's always going to be accusations. There's always going to be the possibility that maybe there was some involvement externally that could have influenced voters in a way that may have gotten them elected. And I don't know for certain if that's the case with President Trump. I don't know if that's certain for, you know, Nikki Haley when she was elected here. I don't know, but you know, with the investigation that's going on, it needs to be allowed to finish. I know that if it was Hillary Clinton that was currently the president of the United States, that the Republicans would be pushing just hand over foot. They'd be pushing as hard as they could to get this investigation as much information as possible, because if it turned out that she was guilty, then it would have been because the investigation found that information. That's hypothetical. She's not our president. You know, Trump is. So if there is the potential that there was some illegal involvement in the election, then you have to let it be investigated. You have to let it see itself through, because if Trump has gotten away with it, if, you know, I'm not saying that he wouldn't be held responsible, or that the people that may have been heavily involved in it won't be held responsible. But if for some reason we have a situation where, you know, he was guilty, chances are he's going to be pardoned anyway. So if he's found guilty, if he's impeached and then removed from office and there are criminal charges against him, I have no doubt in my mind that the then President Pence would then pardon President Trump, former President Trump, whatever you want to call him. I have no doubt in my mind that that is exactly what would happen. And as disturbing as that is, because in my mind, there's absolutely no reason to pardon him. You know, if it was Clinton, I'd feel this. I'd tell you the exact same thing. If they found evidence to support that she was criminally involved in running the 2016 election and undermining that election and undermining our democracy, I feel like that's treason. And you have to follow that up with the punishment of what you would punish someone who commits treason. No pardons allowed. I feel like you go after them. If you're gonna have the investigation and you find that there's necessity to bring criminal charges against President Trump or hypothetically President Clinton or even hypothetically President Bernie Sanders, regardless, if there is evidence to support bringing criminal charges and then they are found guilty, if that president is impeached from office because of said charges and then they have a criminal trial that then, you know, finds them guilty of these charges, I absolutely 100% believe that you have to follow that up with the full letter of the law, that if they committed treason and they are found guilty of committing treason, which in my mind, again, absolutely, if you undermine the election, you're undermining our democracy. That is treason against this country. You have to follow that up with the punishment for treason. And in some cases, the punishment for treason is still death. You know, I mean, it's a fact. Death is still part of the punishment for some criminal acts that are considered treason. I'm not saying we're going to put a president to death. it's highly unlikely. I think I'm more likely to win the lottery than we are to see a president found guilty of treason and put to death for said treason. So, who knows? I'm not saying it's not going to happen. I'm just saying it's highly, highly unlikely. What else is going on? I know we're approaching the time that I would normally do with just one show and me. We will have Zach back on at some point here soon. I know even today he's working out a theme song so that it's more my show and less, you know, tidbits and whatnot that I've picked up from listening to other podcasts and even radio shows that I listened to when I was in high school and elementary school, that sort of thing. So I don't really have much. We're about to kick off our kickball season again. It's summer. It's going to be hot, we've got a bunch of new players. We've actually stolen some players from some of the other teams. One of them in particular is a team that they win their championship, our championship. They win almost every season, and we did happen to be able to pull off heisting some of their players, which was is going to be nice. We'll see. Should be fun. But we look forward to having a good season and whatnot. I am headed to Atlanta next week to go see the Braves play at SunTrust Park, which will be really cool because I've not ever been to SunTrust Park before. It's been several years since I've even been to a Braves game, so this will be a lot of fun for me. I do want to just mention if the direction of this country is important to you and you have the opportunity, you know, absolutely tomorrow, not tomorrow, but you have the opportunity and you are a registered voter. June 12th here in South Carolina is primary day and people need to, you need to do the research and you need to look in to see what these candidates, represent and how they align with you. And look at the issues and really, talk to other people about it because they may have some ideas that you haven't thought of and that it might give you more insight into where your opinions may lie and how you think best that this state and this country can be won. And that goes for everyone in every state because, voting is I don't like to say that it's our civic responsibility, but it is our as far as our country having representatives, those representatives are representing us. And even if you don't vote for someone that is elected, it is still important that if you have an opinion about something that you express it. I have an email that I send out, and maybe next one of these shows I'll read it, but I have an email that I send to Representative Joe Wilson. It goes to Senator Lindsey Graham and Senator Tim, can't think of his last name. Anyway, the other senator here from South Carolina. But I have an email that goes out to them that I send literally every single day that is on gun control and background checks and the necessity of said background checks. I have an email that I send out that is specifically about school safety in the event of a shooter situation. I have an email that's sent out to all three of them about the federal level of basically angst against cannabis and marijuana. I have several emails that I send out every single day because I want to make sure that even if they are not reading it, but that someone's reading, because I get a response if I send seven emails in a week on each subject, I will get at least two responses back in a week from each one of them. And it may not necessarily be them responding, but it is at least a response from the office of, which means that even if it's being ignored by the senator or the representative, that it is being seen by somebody. And that somebody is generally going to be someone that is involved in their office, which means there's the possibility that it might catch their eye and that maybe they might bring them to attention. Marijuana should be legal in this country. I think that there are health benefits. I absolutely believe that there are health benefits to the use of cannabis oils and things like that prolong the lives of cancer patients that make their lives just utterly better in the you know, the miserable lives that they could be living because that they're being restrained by the medications that, one, cost unbelievable amounts of money, and two, don't really do anything to support longer life in the lifestyle or in the cancer bubble. You know, it's not comfortable. It absolutely is not. It's miserable. And there is the potential that there are some uses with marijuana and cannabis that could make lives easier. And you know, my brother, I've probably said this before, but my brother, who is 14 months younger than me, he has had seizures since about the age of 6. He has had he's had one brain surgery and two seizure surgeries, and around the age of 18, he started having seizures again. And it was just a few years ago that marijuana was introduced into his not smoking it, but in either in an edible form or oil drops that have drastically reduced the number of seizures he has. And in fact, he went for almost a year and 6 months without a single seizure, where he was having 3 or 4 a week. Sometimes he'd have 2 a day. But now he's having so few seizures that there is the potential that while he likely will never get a job because of his history, his medical history, there is the potential that he could, you know, be able to function fairly normally if somebody would give him the opportunity, you know. But he's a good guy, and cannabis has really helped get him to a point where he's not having these seizures all the time. You know, I truly believe that there are life-saving potential medical situations that could be improved by cannabis and by at least research into it, you know. So it's all of it's there. There is no reason not to at least allow for the research into it. You know, the fact that they don't allow it is just asinine to me. It doesn't make any sense as to why it's not even available to look into. So we will, I guarantee you, I will have another conversation or another dialogue. I'll involve other people as well, because I definitely want people's opinions on what they think or why they think we're in the situation we are with not being allowed to, you know, research how marijuana affects people medically speaking. You know, I get it. You know, it's there are people that use it as a recreation, and you know what? I'd rather them use marijuana as recreational at home, in the privacy of their own homes, where, you know, they're just chilling out, then I don't know the potential that they could be doing something dangerous or harmful, you know, because marijuana's never killed anyone. It's never happened. I mean, you can take my word for it, or you can research it, but there is no reported incident where the effects of marijuana have killed anyone. No one OD'd on marijuana. It just doesn't happen. It can't. It doesn't. I mean, I'm sorry. It just doesn't. So anyway, I am going to go ahead and wrap this one up. I appreciate you listening. This is the All About Nothing podcast. I am your host, Barrett. You can always follow us on Twitter, AAN pod. You can look for us there, or you can follow me on Twitter at Barrett Gruber. And we will do another one here soon. I'm hoping that maybe I can work it back out where I'm doing this regularly every week. I'm not going to make any promises, because when I make promises, I usually let people down, and that is awful. So sorry. Anyway, we'll do it again very soon. If we do a show next week, it's probably going to be mostly about the primaries. And you know what? Yes, I will say it now. I will do a show next week. And what we'll do is I will make sure that I go into the candidates representing which parties for the elections coming up, at least here in South Carolina. If you have any suggestions, please tweet me or whatnot. I will look into the states. If you want me to, I can look into it and see how people align in those other states as well. So thank you again for listening. We'll do it again real soon. I'm out.